Didn't he have everything? We come to Parshas Ba'alecha, and Aaron receives the gift of lighting the menorah. Now, why did he receive this gift? Explain Chazal that Aaron HaKohen saw that in the inauguration of the Mishkan, all the Nesiim, all the heads of the tribe, brought special karbonos, special gifts to the Mishkan, and Aaron and his tribe were not zeicha to bring those karbonos, those sacrifices, those special gifts. And Aaron was chol shadaita, he was weakened from it. He was in tsar, says the Midrash. And the obvious question is Aaron HaKohen had everything. He was going to be serving in the base HaMikdash itself, in the Mishkan itself. No one else had that privilege. The Levium were the Misharsav, they were around it, they guarded it, they had many duties. So Aaron, his Shevet, had everything. And he's jealous of the Nesiim, the heads of the tribes? HaYitachin, how could it be? What was he jealous of? He was the one who had everything in the world. It's like the biggest businessman. We know Elon Musk is getting close to $1 trillion. And he's jealous of some person making a couple of millions because they had some opportunity in business, in filters, water filters that he didn't have. What? Elon Musk would never be jealous of such a thing because he has everything. Some guy's doing filters. He has all the money. He has all the results. Aaron HaKohen has the avodah. He's serving in the Mishkan on a daily basis. His children are the ones being mamshich, that avodah in the world, serving on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And you're jealous of the Nesiim's one-time gift, the heads of the tribes' one-time gift? What's going on? How do we understand what Aaron's pain was? In addition, the Nesiim's, their karbonos, their sacrifices, were triggered, were caused, because they brought a special gift to the Mishkan. And end of Parshas Nasai, before the whole entire Chanukah, where they bring all their karbonos to inaugurate the Mishkan itself, they first brought wagons. They brought gifts to the Mishkan. They wanted to show their love for the Mishkan. What were those wagons? Those wagons were to help the Levium carry all the different vessels. And when the Mishkan was put away into parts, to carry those parts. So the obvious question is why was Aaron chol shadaita and tsar? Because he didn't get to take apart that which the Nesiim gave over, those karbanos, those sacrifices. Those sacrifices were only triggered as a result of the Nesiim, the heads of the tribes, bringing a different gift for the Levium. So you have, again, the heads of the tribes bring a gift to the Levium. Then they bring karbanos as a result of that gift. Aaron and his shevet aren't relevant because the gifts were for them. The Levium, the Kohanim, couldn't have brought the gifts the Nesiim brought, the wagons, because that was to service the Levium themselves. So if the Levium would have brought that gift, that would be basically giving a gift to themselves. That's not relevant. So it's even more puzzling, what was Aaron upset about? Besides the fact him and the shevet had everything, they were going to be in the Mishkan themselves. They even brought the karbanos practically as the avodah that the Nesiim were giving. Besides that, they weren't relevant to the whole process. It all started with the wagons. And if you look in Chazal, whatever this chol shadaita, whatever this weakness of his mind, this pain he was in, this depression was, the menorah fixed it. And everyone discusses what the menorah was, what was the fixing, what did it give Aaron? And that is the quintessential question here. That's the fundamental question. What is going on? How does the menorah fix whatever that is? And the menorah is something which is kosher bizarre. It doesn't even need the kohen. It doesn't even need Aaron and his shevet. So if that's the case, why did that console Aaron? What was the problem? And what was the solution? And if you continue on in the Parsha, there are many, many, many more puzzling pieces. We're going to try to string them all together to bring all the questions and show how there's a foundation in the Parsha which is going to answer it all up and teach us an extremely deep life lesson. Another very, very puzzling thing if you go through the Parsha is the topic of Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni was when there was a group in Klal Yisrael who were tying mace because they actually took out Yosef's bones. They were taking out the mace, the mita of Yosef HaTzadik because he wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So they took those out. So they were tying mace because of that. And they went up to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, Lama Nigara, why are we worse than everyone else? Because a Tameh Mace, if you're impure, cannot bring the Karban Pesach. So they went and said, why are we worse? We were Tameh, we missed opportunity. Why is that fair? Why are we worse? So the Mefarshim will ask, Emes, and many others, the previous word they said before Lama Nigara, why are we worse, was Anachnu Tameim LeNefesh Adam. We were Tameh to the soul of a person. So why are we worse? You just said it. You just said that you were Tameh to the soul of a person. That's why you're worse. You're coming and ask me why you're worse? You know why you're worse. The Torah has halachas, it has laws, it has dictations about how we do things, and someone who's tummy mace cannot bring the Korban Pesach. So what were they going and saying to Moshe? What was the whole entire Masa Mata? And we see they were successful. So what was their taina? What was the tshuva? What was the answer? And how is that correlated to the whole previous Indian, the opening of the Parsha, where Aaron HaKohen has the menorah as a consolation for his pain? The next very, very interesting topic in the Torah is, as it says, Al Pi Hashem Yisao and Al Pi Hashem Yachanu. They went when Hashem told them, and as well, they stopped when Hashem told them. Now, anyone who ever tried going anywhere, you're in Muncie, and you try going upstate New York, or to Lakewood, to Baltimore, driving cross country, you know one thing. You need directions. If anyone remembers from the old days, before Waze, before Garmin GPS, if you know what that is, there was something called MapQuest, whenever you'd go anywhere. And before MapQuest, there was just maps. So maps were even harder. You had to sit and you say, okay, I want to get from here, I'm in Muncie, I want to get to Lakewood. I have to figure out how to get from Muncie to Lakewood. And you would sit with the map and you'd draw it out. This is before my days. There was no such thing that people did that. It was MapQuest. From the mid-1998 or something like that, 1995, MapQuest came out and it was a phenomenon. You'd go online, you'd punch in your two locations, one location, two location, and then it would print out all instructions. You'd have to follow them very, very tediously. You miss one turn and you're off the route. You were derailed. You have no idea where you're going. And then in 2000, in mid to early 2000, 2008, 2009, Garmin GPS came out and everyone had GPSs and it was the biggest mechai in the world. Now you almost don't know how to get around the block into your next door neighbor's house, two or three blocks away, unless you have a GPS, or you have Waze on, or you have Google Maps, or Apple Maps, some sort of maps, not MapQuest, and not a real map. People don't even know what those things are anymore. So that's now. Could you imagine if you're in the middle of the desert, and you need to get to Eretz Yisrael, that-a-way, and you're living on miracles. Without all the miracles that God's providing for you, you're going to die. So what was the stress of the Torah that on Hashem's word they went, and on Hashem's word they stopped? And it was even more dramatic. It says that Anani HaKavod would lift up for them to go, the heavenly cloud, which they were in its abode at all times, and the Shekhinah, that would lift up. And then when they would stop, it would come down, and a fire would lead them by night. Why was that such a stress in the Torah? The Torah needs to tell us this. Obviously, they had to have divine intervention about where and when to go, because they were in a desert, in a barren desert, and without the heavenly assistance, they would die. What is the lesson, the critical idea, and the foundational point the Torah is trying to teach us when it talks about that which they go and they stop? Again, they didn't have a map, they didn't have MapQuest, they didn't have a Google Maps, they didn't have Waze, they didn't have anything. Of course Hashem had to guide them. What's this stress the Torah was putting over here? Tell us that on Hashem's word they went, Al Pi Hashem Yisao, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, and they stopped. Of course they had to do. It's going to be Hashem, Moshe, it had to be something. What here is that this focus. You go on in the Parsha, and we come to something which seemingly has zero relevance, and that's Yisrael. Yisrael, the Chosid Moshe, he wants to go, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, please, Shver, this is my father-in-law, please stay with us. Now, hopefully you have a good relationship with your father-in-law. Hopefully after, you know, your wife gives birth, or you go there for Pesach or Sukkot or a vacation, you're able to live there. But there's few and far cases where we know that someone's going to be at their father-in-law's feet begging him to stay, please stay with us, he can't go. That's in a normal son-in-law and father-in-law relationship. Here, you have it that Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gadol Hador, one of the greatest people who ever lived in history, leader of Klal Yisrael, who has a million things going on, which is what Yisro helped him with originally. Yisro said, you're too busy. You got to set up some systems to help you delegate your energies. And now, this is what he's focusing on? He's at his father-in-law's feet begging him, please don't go. Please. What was Moshe Rabbeinu doing? What was so great about Yisro that Moshe Rabbeinu had to come and beg, literally beg him, don't leave us. Don't leave Klal Yisrael. I mean, there's a lot of other responsibilities dealing with millions of people in the desert, living off miracles, but they didn't have Moshe Rabbeinu as a constant masumata with Hashem. He has to be ready at all times. As we know from later in the Parsha, with Aaron and Miriam, with the Indian of the Lashon Hara they spoke about, and that how could he divorce his wife? And Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu, there was no one like him, and there was no Navi like him. He's with me at all times. And this is what he's doing with his time? He's going and begging his father-in-law, please stay. Obviously, there's something critical here, something hidden about Yisrael that we have to learn, and that was so important for Klal Yisrael to have in the Midbar and really forever. Because the Parsha, where we get the Torah, where we get our chibur, our connection, our life force in this world, is named after Yisrael. So there has to be something very critical here. And more than that, it has to be critical to the ideas in this week's Parsha. Because it has no relevance. You're going through all the different things. It has no relevance to what's happening. Torah didn't have to say it. Didn't have to say it here. Why did Torah put it in, this idea at all? And why did it have to be put here? And when you come to the end of the Parsha, you have the Mis'ainanim and you have the Parsha of the Mun. The Mis'ainanim were literally the complainers. It said they complained they were going on the road. They left Mitzrayim. And they got burned in a horrible fire. Afterwards, you have the story of the Mun, where they complained about the Mun. And they complained they didn't have meat. And Chazal tells us already, they had meat. We know that Shevet Reuben had a lot of meat. So what are they doing? And now they're going and complaining to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They didn't have meat, going complaining to Moshe. And Moshe's like, I can't deal with these people. Hashem says, I can't feed them. What are all these complaints about the Derech, about the Mun? The Mun is an amazing food. How can we possibly understand that Klal Yisrael would come, the Dor HaDeah, such great people, and have these complaints, and it was a very harsh punishment. It happened one after the other. What was going on? Mineu Bei, how do we understand that story? And what was its connection to the complete rest of the Parsha? We find all these nyanim of Aaron, of the Menorah, of Yisroi, of the fact that they were Api Hashem Yichanu, Api Hashem Yiso. What are all these ideas in this Parsha sprinkled out? And what do they have to do with one another? So we're going to try and give an approach which will answer everything and help us lead our lives a bigger and better and higher way. I was once speaking to Nissim Black about a certain thing we were both involved in, and we got onto the topic of tefillah. And Nissim told me, he said, yeah, a lot of people discuss with me their tzaras, their stories in their life, their challenges, and they tell me they're davening so hard. And Nissim would ask them, what does it mean you're davening hard? They say, no, I say Tehillim, and I daven in Shach, just try to have more kavana. He says, you know what I tell people when they tell me that? He says, you know what davening is? Nissim said about himself the following story. He said that when he came to Eretz Yisrael, this was in the news, he moved into Yerushalayim, and he wanted to send his kids to certain schools in Yerushalayim, where Yerushalmi, Chassidus, and the schools were giving him a very hard time. He tried getting everyone he knew to call. He knows a lot of powerful people, very wealthy people. They would call up these schools. Schools had nothing doing. He knew very, very big rabbanim, Rosh Yeshivas, Talmid Chachamim. They would call. Nothing doing. He went to Reb Chaim Kanievsky, this was in the news, and he told him the story. Chaim said, no, they have to let you in. And it was all to no avail. His kids were not getting into school. And someone who's coming to Eretz Yisrael, they're excited. They're living in Yerushalayim, you have the air, and you just want to be welcomed. You want to have your kids put in the schools you're trying to get them into so they can have a chinuch. And everyone's shutting you out. And this was at a loss. He didn't know what to do. He said he drove up to Tzfat, and he went to the Rizal's Kever. He said, Yoni, I went there and I davened. He said, you know how long I davened for? In one place, I stood by one place and davened. I said, let's see. Okay. Normal person, 5-7 minutes from Esrei. A normal person probably say Tehillim for half hour. A really intense person could, with a drink and a bathroom break and some coffee and cake in the middle, maybe 3 hours straight. So he said, You know how long I davened for? I said, okay, how long? I don't know. Tell me. He said, I davened for 17 hours straight. What? I said, listen, did you just say 17 hours? He said, 17 hours. I said, no. 17? He says, yeah, I davened for 17 hours straight. I spoke to Hashem. I asked him for help. I told him my troubles. I said, I'm in a situation where I'm stuck. I have nowhere to go, nothing to do. No one can help me. My kids aren't getting to school. I just came to your holy land. I need your help. And it wasn't just that. He spoke over and over and over. His emotional struggles, his technical struggles, his pleas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 17 hours straight. I was absolutely stunned. He said, that's davening. That's where you're in a place where you have nothing else, no one else, and only one thing to turn to. And I couldn't stop turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he said, after He had that instance where he stood by the Rizal's Kever for 17 hours in one place, davening, nonstop. He said then, Hashem gave him the idea to move to Beit Shemesh. And he didn't have such a havmina before, a thought to move to Beit Shemesh. Because he came to Eretz Yisrael, you live in Yerushalayim. And everyone knows there's no air, there's no feeling, there's no electricity like Yerushalayim. So it wasn't even in his mindset. And he moved to Beit Shemesh, Shema Beit Shemesh, and he found a lot more like-minded people. He found schools which feed his kids. He said it was a game changer. We see that when you are stuck, when you have nowhere else to turn, when you're down in the dumps and everything's crashing down upon you, a Jewish person always has where to go. He always has who to turn to. He always has a lifeline and a source of electricity and power to plug into, to give him that Yeshua. And that's turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That means in every single situation throughout history, a Jewish person, no matter what, no matter where, no matter when, always can turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Melech Malchei HaMelachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the King of all kings, is Avinu Shebashamayim. We have this extreme duality that no one else has. Klal Yisrael is called Bini Bechari Yisrael. My children, my firstborn, my son, Yisrael. We are Hashem's children. We are the offspring of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We come from Him directly. He has direct relationship with us. And that means you can always turn to Him. A child can always turn to their father no matter what. We'll have to know in our lives that we can, we must, and we only have one option in every situation, that's to turn to Avinu Shebashamayim. What were the Misa'inim scared of, these people who complained? Rashi says they complained, but it wasn't about the complaints. Most times when we complain about something, when we create a situation where we have this reason, that reason, that reason, you're angry, it's really an excuse, a facade, a mask for something else. Rashi says, Misoinim is Lashon Elila, which means a complaint. Rashi says by the man as well. They had meat. They had meat. They had what to eat. Why were they complaining about the food? Because it was an excuse. What was it an excuse for? Rashi says, because they wanted to be Lifroish Min Hamakon. They wanted to separate from God. Why would they want to separate from God? They were by our Sinai. They felt it. They felt the intensity. They saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They heard Anoichi. They heard Lo Yehi Me'ir Ma'panai. Don't have other gods. They felt the intensity. They saw the Kadosh from Brachim. They saw sounds. They were living in a level of complete ecstasy and a visceral reality, a connection to the Bar Elam. That was their life. Then they left Midbar Sinai. And they were in the desert. The Eretz Lezeruah was not. There was no plantation. There was no water. There was no food. There was nothing. If you're in a situation that's fearful, that's scary, where you have no other option, you have two options at that point. To turn away, to run away, to rely on yourself, or to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and completely rely on Him. They were scared. Scared of what? Of a vulnerability. Of a connection where I only have You. Because anytime you make a connection, anytime you rely on somebody, you're opening yourself up to getting hurt. If I'm leaning on You, I'm trusting in You, I'm relying upon You, that means if You move away, I fall. That's a scary reality. The greatest problem a person's going to have in his life, in his relationships, is that he's going to be scared to lean in. He's going to be scared to open up. He's going to be scared to be one with the other person. Because when you're one with the other person and then they hurt you, it hurts so much more. This is an explanation, we could say, in what Klal Yisrael was scared of, or what the Erev Rav, who mixed it in, was scared of, and what they tried instilling in the rest of the Jewish people, which unfortunately worked to a certain extent. That they said, we can't have this relationship with Hashem, we can't rely upon Him. What if it doesn't work out? What if He's not going to be there for us? A Jew in his life has to know that no matter what you're going through, no matter what the challenge is, no matter what the difficulty, no matter what the climb, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take you up. Where does that come from? That we can have the security for a safe relationship, of bitachon, of kivoy, of hope. In history, that comes from Hanukkah. Klal Yisrael were in Yavon, darkness, difficulty, challenge, a darkness in the world. The Midrash and Bereishis says that Choshech is Yavon, they're a darkness. The Chashmonaim came, the children of Aaron, and they gave us a light in the darkness. They gave us hope that when all odds are against you, when you feel like you're being crushed, when you're being put down, when you can't get up, yes, you can get up. The Yid, the Jew, the Yehudi always has the strength to get up, be Meiser Nefesh, to push through, and Hashem's going to help you. What happened when they did that? They saw unprecedented, absolutely astounding, fabulous miracles in the war and in the Menorah. The Menorah, Hashem gave them a miracle. They had the pure oil. And then Hashem gave them another 7 days of miracles just to say, I love you. I love you, Klal Yisrael. You can use Tamei oil. Tum Hutcher B'tzibor. There's a halacha that if you have Tamei oil and everyone's Tamei, you're allowed to use the impure oil. But Hashem gave them an extra 7 days of the pure oil lasting to say, I love you. And the fact that I love you through and through is a miracle because there's no one else in history that has this love. It's only the Jewish people. Where it's Ahava, Eino Tzluya B'davar. It's not dependent upon anything. That love, that connection is always relevant to us. The Ramban says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Aaron that you are going to have something for all of history that no one else has. You're going to give Klal Yisrael. What did Aaron give Klal Yisrael? He gave them the fact that no matter what darkness, no matter what difficulty, no matter what challenge, a Jew does not give up. A Jew will always pull through. A Jew will always rise up and connect. Aaron was chol shadayta, he got weak, he was in pain. Because he was the one in Klal Yisrael who loved everyone, who cared for everyone, who gave to everyone. And he saw the Nisim, the heads of the tribes, inaugurated the Mishkan. What was the Mishkan? The Mishkan represents the idea, the Asu li Mishkan, Vasu Mikdash v'shachanti b'saycha. Make for me a holy place, and I will rest inside them. That means the idea in history of the Mishkan is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us that every single solitary Jew is a resting place for the Shekhinah. Aaron saw that that's what the Nesiim gave Klal Yisrael for history. He said, I love my children. I want to give them something too. For example, let's say you have a normal family, a guy, he's on vacation with his wife, he won one of the Kol raffles, the big trips. He's going to Eretz Yisrael in first class. Who's in first class? The multi-millionaires. And this guy, he won the raffle. He's sitting there in first class, he's leaning back, he's enjoying himself. And all of a sudden, he starts smelling something. He's like, what is that? And he smells, he's like, is that tuna? He's like, what? In first class, they're serving like tuna fish, like the really strong smelling tuna fish? Everyone knows. One of the basic ABCs of Ben Adam L'Chavero, it says, Hazrei Chameicha, and don't bring tuna fish on a bus. Like when you are on that bus and you're in the first row, and then you turn, you're like, what is that smell? It's tuna fish. Maybe if you love tuna fish, it's okay, but for the Hamanam, we can't assume that a strong tuna fish smell is something that everyone wants. You turn to the last row on the bus, 25 seats behind you, you see the guy with tuna fish. It's affecting everybody. I recently took some of my bachurim somewhere. These guys, I like tuna fish. We were going on a trip. And then one bachur was going to stuff into the car last, and he was eating tuna fish. Everyone was like, no, you cannot come in the car with tuna fish. Everyone knows a tuna fish smell. So back to the story. This guy is on his trip to Eretz Yisrael in first class, and he smells tuna fish. You can't believe it. In first class, that's what they decide to serve, but they're out of their minds. He turns, and he sees someone eating tuna fish. Not only is it someone, this person, he knows him from the greater Jewish world. He's a multi-millionaire, even maybe billionaire. So he's like, what is going on? They're about to serve us steaks with lamb chops, Kobe beef, nothing but the best in first class. And he's eating a tuna fish sandwich. I have to ask him, he can get them to catch him a fresh salmon from the sea. They'll do it somehow. They'll make it work. They'll get the world's longest fishing rod and get it up to first class. Why in the world is this person eating a tuna fish sandwich in first class? So he turns to the person. He says, I have to ask you. Why are you eating this tuna fish sandwich? The man looks at him. He says, what do you mean? He says, we're in first class. You can get fresh tuna from the Atlantic right now. You can get steaks. You can get pancakes, whatever you want. Why are you eating a tuna fish sandwich on rye? The man looks at him, he says, because before I go on a trip, my mother always comes over to my house and she drops off a tuna fish sandwich. And when I get off the plane, the first call I get is, Yanko, did you eat the tuna fish sandwich? You ate what I made you? You liked it? I said, I have to eat it. My mother made it for me. Why does this billionaire's mother want to give him a tuna fish sandwich? Because she is his mother and she wants to give him. Is he going to have food? Is he going to have sustenance? Is he going to have the best food ever and the freshest fish straight from the Atlantic in the middle of the flight? Yes. But that won't quench the mother's thirst to give her child. When you care about somebody, you want to give them. Aaron was loved by all of Klal Yisrael. He wanted to give everybody. He wanted to make sure for history they would have something. He wanted to give it. He cared. He loved. So he said, the Nesiim gave them the concept that they will have God with them at all times. The Shekhinah, they can make the world a holy place if they sanctify themselves. What am I giving them? Hashem tells him, I understand why you're in pain. You want to give your children. You want to give my children. But your portion is greater than theirs. Because for most of history, Klal Yisrael will be in Golus. For most of history, Klal Yisrael will be in challenge. They'll be in darkness. And you will give them the light in the darkness. The menorah lights up Klal Yisrael. It gives us that hope. It gives us that bitachon, that trust in Hashem, that Hashem is with us. And no matter what darkness, no matter what difficulty, no matter what downtroddenness, you're in the dust, you're in the dirt. You have hope. You have trust in Hashem. You have safety and security. That takes vulnerability. That takes us letting go and saying, I do not have the power. No koich emetz miyadi. Yavan, they said, we have the power. None of that. You have one thing in life. And that's to rely on the Bayre Olam. To rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what the message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving Aaron was. That you were going to give them Chanukah. Yosef HaTzadik, he represented Bitachon. The Midrash says, Baruch HaGever Sheyivtach Hashem V'Hayi Hashem V'Tachon on Yosef HaTzadik. And when Yosef was pulled out of the pit, when Yosef was pulled out of the bar, he was in out of the jail. The Midrash says, Me'afela L'Oira. He went from darkness to light. This is our history. We will be in darkness. We will be in challenge. We will be in difficulty. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always there to take care of you. This is the whole entire parsha. Who was Yisra? Yisra was somebody who never stopped seeking the truth, which is the ultimate truth, the emes, shmoi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was emes. He was seeking no matter what. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yisra, my father-in-law, you are a critical factor, a critical lesson, a lifeline for us. You didn't stop. You did every Avodah Zarah you could until you found the truth, until you heard about our Sinai, until you heard about Kriyas Yamsuf, until you heard about the word of Amalek. We need you here. This is the lesson that we have to learn, that we always have to be seeking HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every situation. And this is Al Pi Hashem Yisa'u, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu. Every single situation in our life, wherever we go, whenever we stop, we have to know Hashem is with us. The Gemara in Shabbos is clear that if in your life you're always going with the mindset that Hashem is with me in every situation, then you are in the hands of Hashem. You're always in one place. It's not two places. It's not this place, that place, that place, that place. You're always in one place. And that's in the hands of Hashem. We have to constantly live this reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking us in every single situation, everywhere we go. That means when I go in the darkness, I'm facing challenges. Challenges in Parnassa, challenges in Shidduch, challenges in Yeshiva, getting into Yeshiva, learning in Yeshiva, challenges with friends, challenges in Shalom Bayis. Every single challenge you're going to face, you have to have in mind, you have to live with, you have to strive and go up with the idea that I am with Hashem. Hashem is here with me in the darkness. And when Hashem is with you in the darkness, that darkness becomes light. We have to always know and attach this idea. Baruch HaGever Asher Yivtach Hashem B'Hayi Hashem Yivtachoi. Blessed is the strong man, is the man who trusts in Hashem, and then Hashem will be his security. When you trust in Hashem, then Hashem becomes your security. We have to live this in our lives. We are facing so many difficulties, so many challenges, so many setbacks in life. We feel, what's going to be with me? So many times where we don't know where to look, and the answer is we have one place to look. That's the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Say, Hashem, I need your help. It says, Kaveh al Hashem. Chazak v'amet zibecha v'kaveh al Hashem. It says, Kaveh al Hashem. You hope to Hashem. And what do you do when it doesn't work out? Chazak v'amet zibecha v'kaveh al Hashem. And you strengthen your heart, and you continue to hope towards Hashem. This is the history of the Jewish people. This is our reality. This is our essence. And this is the world we live in. We have to relate to it. We have to understand it. We have to attach to it. That means every situation you're in life is difficult. You always have to have mind, Hashem's here with me, and Hashem's going to help me. There are a lot of Chishban and Shemayim, and we won't always see it. It won't always be clear to us. But if you know Hashem's taking care of you, there is hope. There is light in the darkness. And it will be Gerim Yeshuas. Will it be Gerim Yeshuas every single time? No, there are obviously factors. And no one can tell you that every single time it's going to work out in the way that you feel as a Yeshua, that you feel as a salvation. But there is a segula muvteches, as is clear in the Rishonim, in the Achronim, that when you have bitachon Hashem, you will be helped. You will be on a path to being helped. As clear in the Maharal, in the Siv Bitachon, and many, many other sources. Is that when you're in darkness, you have light. Now that light sometimes will light up the room in a way where you feel helped. And sometimes, you're just going to have to be in the difficulty and know that even though it's hard, it's for my good somehow. And that's the lesson Yosef Atzadik told the brothers. You think you did bad? You saved the world. I was able to be amazed and I gave sustenance to everybody because I ended up here. This is a lesson we have to leave and lead our life with. We have to live and lead our lives with the fact that Hashem is with us. And that is Mesugal to be Paul Yeshua's. And even when it's not, it's a comfort that Hashem's running everything. It's for the good. Is it hard? Is it challenging? Yes. But you have the key.